Oh no.
Okay.
What's up, y'all? Oh, I can turn my phone off. How are we doing today?
Do not disturb. Put that out now.
No, we are live.
Oh, we're live?
Oh, we're live.
Well, that's probably should.
Okay, we're doing it live.
Get to the tab then, huh?
We're doing it live. How are we doing today, fellas?
Fantastic. Another beautiful day here in Chicago. More snow.
Yeah.
Above 10 degrees, though, so you can't complain. All right, that's great.
That's good. I did my first shoveling this morning. A little cardio at 8:30 more in the morning. It was all good.
Nothing like that to get your day started, I'm sure, with a little coolness riding up your shirt, the back of your shirt there.
Oh, dude, I was bundled. I had my new coat, my new boots. I was, I remember to take the tags off. I was ready to go this winter.
Suited and booted.
I was ready to, old school, 2010. That was fun.
You were looking forward to the snow. You've been waiting for the snow.
I kind of was. I had the Rocky soundtrack queued up and everything. I was ready to go. And then I was out of breath in 45 seconds.
We're not going to take it. Yeah, I already know. 100%.
Oh, man.
What are we doing today, y'all? What's popping today? What's good in the LinkedIn world?
Dude, it's Friday afternoon. I feel like it's been a wild week and people are ready to call it a weekend. There's a lot. It's active out there right now. Roles are coming in. People are getting hired. Jobs, interviews. It's the thick of it, right? We're way beyond the holidays. And I think we stopped saying Happy New Year by this week. So that's over.
I haven't taken
down and we're just in it.
So no.
You haven't taken down your lights?
Oh. Nope. So technically,
you're holding on.
I'm still saying it.
You're holding on? All right.
I'm just lazy.
I think, the rest of us are moving forward, Kevin. And, with the rest of the year, we got – January, right? What's everyone doing in recruiting right now, January? What's our goal for the year? Did we hit it last year? We got to – you throw this big number out there and are you – okay, then it's like, now what? How do I hit it, right? How do I hit that goal? You know, is it a million? Is it 100K? Is it 500? Is it 10 million, 50 million, whatever it is? But what's the game plan? How do we get there? We're going to just start diving right into that today. All the good stuff. That's why we got Keely on here joining us for the first time together. That's why I'm excited. And we've been working with everyone in the Digital Recruiter Mastermind, helping them come up with a sales plan, their content plan. But we got one person with 5 million impressions on a post already this year, which is nuts. But more importantly, we got people closing clients, working on roles, and just kind of game planning for the year. So I had to bring in the expert Keely and to kind of get his breakdown, his thoughts, what he's seeing, right? How do you tackle 2024 sales plan and hit your goals? So that's what we're going to cover today. Questions, comments, please throw them in the chat. Let us know you're here. We want this to be interactive. As always, this is for you, not for us. So let's dive in. What do we say, guys?
Yeah, fired up.
Keely, what are you seeing? Client calls, recruiters reaching out to you and your content, all that. What are you seeing? What are you hearing from prospects, and how are you helping them? Like, how are you giving them direction?
Yeah. First things first, like the old saying, I see something a lot, though. It's, how to eat an elephant. It's one bite at a time. The same thing applies for 2024 goals. When it comes to 1 million, 500,000, doesn't matter. You're not going to get there today. Let's be honest. You're not going to get the $500,000 today, but you can take a step closer to get there today. And you can take a step closer there tomorrow and next week. And what I'm hearing, seeing, and speaking to people a lot about is putting together a plan that extends beyond 1 week or 2 weeks of just sending out resumes and hoping something sticks. It's coming up with plans that last months to a full year with the goal of getting into targeted accounts. And then from there, breaking that into smaller and smaller goals of who do I need to meet with? What's my plan of attack to get after them? Even some things as simple as what's my goal for today from a KPI perspective? How many people are going to comment on LinkedIn? What am I striving for with my post impressions? How many direct messages am I going to send out? Like, breaking it down to smaller and smaller chunks makes it seem more real and more attainable. Because, I'll use myself as an example, right? I've told this in the class a couple times. I'm trying to become a runner this year, and I've never been a runner. And so me and my buddies have made a bet to see who can run a half marathon in July. I am not one of those people, but I'm trying one day at a time to get better and better so that way I can hopefully beat my friend come July when we do actually run it. But I'm only going to get there by taking small steps, building up to the ultimate goal of being able to run that thing in July.
It's there are a lot of correlations with that, like fitness, New Year's resolution, right? I think it's like a new year, new me, right? New year, new sales plan, or is it just updating the sales plan and taking what you've learned and just that one step at a time piece? It's so, I think people gloss it over because it's like, oh, all right, yeah, I've heard that a million times, but we see it all the time. Who has success and who doesn't? It's people that keep showing up to the calls, that they always have their outreach going. They keep posting content. Like they keep, oh, I reached out, or I tried this call strategy, this email, and this happened. Like they're just pushing the needle every bit, little by little, every single day. And it starts working. And in recruiting, I mean, when that multiplier starts to hit, it can really hit. And that's like, it gets a little bit, you know, monotonous at times, but if you come in with that plan, right? So I guess, Keely, what's the next step? So like you chip away at it. Where do you start in building a plan?
Yeah. So I kind of go back to when you talk about the boring part. One of my favorite lines is success is hidden in the boring basics. Yeah. Because those that are successful do the boring stuff over and over and over again. Like look at some of the greatest athletes in the world. And every year when the season starts, they're right back at the basics. And they work on the basics all year round too, because they understand that's the building blocks to get to where they want to go. The high levels, the championships, whatever you want to talk about. It's the same that applies in recruiting and with sales as well. And when you're talking about, you know, where do you start? You said new year, new me. I like new year, new me, new sales territory because it rhymes a little bit in the way. You look at your territory. Who knows when was the last time you updated? Was it back in 2022 when things were a little bit different than 2023, which 2024 will be different as well, of course. When's the last time you visited and said, what is my territory plan? Who am I going after? Are these accounts worth my time? Because that's really what we're all fighting against, is the time spent on good accounts versus bad accounts. Every minute we spend on the bad account, we could have been spending on a good account that had way higher upside, way higher ROI, and then the one that you're celebrating at the end of the year because you build for $500,000. Like that's what we're all striving for. Easier said than done, though. But the only way you get there is starting back at the beginning and building on the basics.
Well, you bring up such a good point. Letting go is so important in recruiting and in sales, right? Like that clutching, right? It's like, it's almost like, you know, I don't know, just kind of morbid, but right? Like, you know, Mufasa and Lion King, right? Holding on to the cliff, right? To a bad prospect, to a bad, did I go rogue?
My son watched that. I feel like that was not like, that was an upsetting scene for my
family. That was too much.
Well, yeah, you know, they're 70 younger, so.
I want people to remember this and ingrain it. So, you know, I went there. I'm all right with it. No apologies. But you gotta let go of the bad prospect, the bad client. Like you have to create the energy in the room for good, for great clients. And the chase, I mean, just a constant, you know, Wile E. Coyote, Roadrunner chase. That's a much more PG example. You know, you gotta let go of that, right? You know, back in 2023, 2022, and I hear people holding on to accounts like, man, they were so good in 2022, 2021. I wish they would come back. Like, those are 2 years that were unlike any other years I've ever seen or known about in recruiting, right? So we have to, I think, let go of that expectation, number one, right? If you got some great referrals, some great business there, great. I hope you saved up the acorns, right? Because now it's like time to learn real sales and real business development. This is the true grind. Like, this is it. And you got to, you know, if they're giving you the runaround, you got to be able to at least internally just let that go and work on something new. Because we promise on the other side, it's way more fun. That doesn't mean it's not a lot of work, but it's a lot more fun. And if those are people are going to ever come back, it's because you let them go, right?
Right?
You know, you love something, let it go. I mean, it's more applicable, honestly, in recruiting. Right. You want to love a client, they don't love you back, let it go, right? And focus on to the next thing. I think that is one of the key things in building out the plan, right? A top 20, a top 25 account list is just really being honest of, if you really only have three targets that you know about that could have potential, great, work on getting more, right? If you have 40, okay, work on whittling it down a little bit, right? What can you focus on? But you gotta let go of those ones that just aren't gonna do it for you. Right, yeah. They treat you, they're rude, what's your fee, they don't give you feedback, the time of day, like all that stuff, like you got to let it go.
I think of more Frozen as the more PG rated Let It Go.
Yeah, there we go. We're really getting a little bit here.
Yeah, again. Yeah. But Mufasa, maybe a little more Frozen Let It Go. That soundtrack always sticks with me. But I agree. Like, look, you do have to inspect your clients constantly and evaluate, are they worth my time? Because I think a lot of people, myself included, especially when you're starting out, you're scrapping for all the business that you can get, you'll take whatever you get. And that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. We've all been there. Once you get to a certain point, the downside of working with those clients is greater than the upside of going to find new clients. Mm-hmm. And you have to evaluate those clients on a criteria, however you want to do it, and say, hey, am I spending my time wisely, continuing to pound my head against the table on this client? Or should I just, as you say, let it go and go find someone else? And yeah, I'm starting back at zero. They don't know me, but I know if I get in there, the upside will far outweigh whatever this bad client can bring in for me.
So Keely, I say I got nothing else and I got one client that don't treat me well, but one client and something is better than nothing.
True. Right? Yeah.
What do you say to that?
Man, there's a lot of nuance to that. Like,
yeah,
it's, I mean, again, like when you're, I'm thinking to myself too, when I was starting out, I would have like one wreck up on the board for weeks at a time, and I'd be scrapping and clawing whatever I could to try to fill the thing. And we all know that wreck most likely is a one in a million type of candidate anyways. And you're going to take it. You're just going to do it. You're going to just grind through it, try to fill it with the hope maybe of then turning what is, I'll say not a bad client, but maybe a troubled client, and coach them up a little bit too. Because that is something as well that I want to make sure that I'm talking about here, is just because they're not the ideal client today doesn't mean you can't coach them up into being an ideal client, right? Yeah. Working with them and teaching them, because that's what it is. They might not know any different. They might just think like, oh, what's wrong with waiting a week to give feedback? Like, that's what we always do. It's like, cool. That doesn't work though in today's environment because of X, Y, and Z, right? Or, hey, I'm really stuck on this requirement. Great. Understand though, you're not going to fill this role because this requirement is so niche. The only people around are going to have to relocate here to get here, right? Like, there is some give and take with these clients that you have to educate them on. And you can turn someone who, again, had some sticking points, was hard to work with, into the ideal client by being a partner to them as well. And I think that differentiates some of the best versus the vendors, right? Because if you're doing your job the right way, you're a partner to your clients. They look to you for advice. They look to you for help. A vendor, they look to you to just fill a role, right? Your resume shop, a vendor to me means you are a faceless, nameless organization that can be replaced with the pickup of a phone. A partner cannot, right? A partner brings more to the table, and therefore it's a lot harder to let go of a partner. And that's what you want to strive and get to.
Absolutely. It's all very well said.
Yeah, I think, go ahead. I think on those initial calls, right? That's why it's so important to ask a ton of questions. That's why it's so important to be incredibly curious so that you can identify some of these things where you are the expert, you're the recruiter. I think oftentimes when we get into this, and I've seen it with junior recruiters all the time, the other side knows more than they do about the recruiting process. And it's like, no, they don't. Yes, they're paying you for sure, but they're paying you to be the expert. So you have to, you know, if there's points of, you know, disagreement and committing because you know it's a bad process, you are helping them. You are saving them. And by being that person, they are much more likely, as Keely said, to turn themselves around and recognize you as that expert if you come in with that thought process that, you know, you are the consultant. It's not, you're right. You're not just a vendor. Exactly. You're the partner to come in there and look at the entire process at a bird's eye view.
It's true, because it's sometimes like people want to ask those questions or they get scared to, because what if I don't get the response, like the right response? Well, that's your answer. If they respond the way that they don't want to engage and you're giving them the opportunity to engage, that's your answer right there. Maybe how they're going to be as a client, or where they're at right now as a potential prospect and client. Like, they may not be ready to engage, or maybe you need to take a different approach, right? But at least you want to rip the Band-Aid off fast. And asking those questions, Kevin, right, and taking Keely's approach, like, that's ultimately what you want to do. Have enough volume, have enough prospects, conversations where you're just ripping the Band-Aid off fast. And by doing, and what I mean is like just asking those questions, right? Like, if you see open jobs and they say they're not hiring, well, how'd you fill those roles? Oh, I don't want to talk about it, or, you know, whatever. Or they might not respond. Or, you know what? Actually, good point. Like, that has been open for a while. That is a struggle. Like, you know, yeah, this is what's been going on. Right. I think, you know, Keely, you and I talked to this recruiter client this morning about that. Like, that's how she pivoted and she opened up a whole conversation. right? And like just, but being okay with the no, right? And asking those questions, and the no could be direct and it could be indirect, and really getting comfortable with that. I think part of the whole planning process, I think, requires that mindset. Like, you're going to try to build a top 20, a top 30. And in doing that, you're going to hear no and be or rerouted a bunch of times. And that's okay, right? Like, you're working towards the yes. And you can only do that if you keep going.
Well, that's like
keep going with the questions.
That's the being open to the conversation, right? Like, not there's something to going into those calls with a plan, like an initial idea, but you have to really be open to like you said, to whatever the answer is, because ultimately you're just there to find out what the problem is. You're not there with your solution because you don't know what the problem is yet. That's why we're asking all those questions.
Right. Because you can't do that from initial cold pitch messaging. That's why, I know we're veering off to an important segue, which is that cold opening pitch. Hey, we can work on your roles. We'd love to partner with you. You don't know that. You don't know if they're a good client or not, right? You don't know if they're going to treat you as a vendor or a consultant or if they're even open that what their experience is. So getting in that mindset as you're building out your plan and your target accounts, like your job is to generate conversations and from there kind of filter down who's at the stage that they're open to entertaining. Now, the timing might not be right, but they're at least entertaining the idea of partnering with you and consulting with you, right? Like, that's kind of the mindset as you're building out this plan and executing it.
I mean, you guys said all. I don't need to add more to that. Like, I feel like you guys.
Hi, Keely. No.
Well, I think the only thing I would add on, like Kevin brought up the really good point about when you're sitting in front of these individuals, especially I'm thinking of people like early in your career, like 1 or 2 years in, there's this like inferiority complex you have sitting in front of them because they're so much smarter at what they do. And that's okay. They're supposed to be smarter than what they do, right?
Great.
Like, I use myself as an example. I moved from healthcare into scientific and I knew nothing. And I was sitting in front of a microbiology manager 2 weeks later and he was throwing out terms. I had no clue what they meant. And I tried to be as smart as him at what he does. And I just put my foot in my mouth. It was a big mistake. Yeah. It was only after I was coached up and taught, you're bringing something to the table that they don't know. You're an employment expert. You understand the space and why they're having challenges hiring and why the skill set's so hard to find and why their competitors are stealing their talent. Like, this is what you bring to the table. You're not a microbiology expert. So don't try to be. Like, yes, you need to learn the lingo a little bit. Yes, you need to understand kind of what goes in the job as well. But a true partner works with that manager to understand those pieces and then bring something to the table too in terms of how it is to find these people, why it is to find these people, how to help with the interview process and doing all the stuff that you're supposed to be good at. You are an employment expert and that's what you bring to the table. And if you remind yourself of that, it's a lot harder to then fall back into that inferiority complex, which is apparently a hard word for me to say.
It's such a good point. It's all right. It's Friday. We've been on a lot of calls this week. It's such a great point. I want to bring Sevi's question up. You know, how do you position your messaging in a way to be viewed as a recruitment partner versus coming across as a vendor? And I think you just hit on the approach and the mindset perfectly, which is don't try to be the industry expert unless you are. Some of you are in your niche and you can, right? Like, I totally, if you are, but if you aren't, right, lean in, and this is so. This is
what you hit it right there. Industry expert. Well, if you're, you know, and we work with those, right, that were once a software engineer that now recruit for software engineers. Well, then you would position yourself as just that, and they're going to resonate with that. So, sorry, I just want to say that.
Well, yeah, well, you could talk about it, you could reference it, you know, in terms of team building or hiring. And I think to answer the question is, you know, a lot of the connection messages, and we all get these. I know it because we all share them. The, hey, and I see people, you know, and God bless them. They're trying automation. They're recruiters. They're targeting their first degree connections this year. And they're messaging me like, hey, let me know if you want to be a recruitment partner this year. I'm like, well, good shot at the automation. Here's my link to a call if you want to learn how to do it the right way. Right. But it's you got to curate the list. Number one, you have to have your profile and your prospecting list really aligned. So then your messaging can be just opening up the conversation instead of being like, hey, I can work on roles or this is like we do all of these things. Let your profile say that. Your messaging should be like, hey, what challenges are you facing in the market? Or, you know, hey, we're seeing that our clients in food production are having a really hard time finding maintenance mechanics, electricians. Like, how's that going for you guys?
Could I bird's eye view that?
Stuff like that, but go ahead.
I just want to bird's eye view that. So what Clark is saying is it's the, like, think about it. The vendor is transactional. They want the sale right now. What we're talking about is being relational. The more relational you are, the more curious you are, those questions, that's how they're going to get like, okay, they're different. They're asking me different questions. Their approach to this is different. And that's why I like to use words like embed myself. We're a white glove service. We do our research on you so that we represent you in the market as though we worked in your organization. Like, that's the way you are not a vendor. And it's just different because this is not normally how vendors talk. They generally don't do research. They want that job description and they want to go.
Well, we've been talking about it all week, guys. Like, give them a different experience than they're used to. And you always have to be thinking about that. What are they currently experiencing from recruiters? From, it could be internal recruiters. It could be external agencies, ones they work with, ones that are trying to get in the door, right? Like, what is your competition doing, right? And standing out. And the competition, they're trying automation. They're trying to post content. We see a lot of, we see the rocket emojis, right? Copy and paste from ChatGPT, right? That content, I mean, there's a lot of that happening. So how do you give them a different experience, right? And it is kind of setting up the profile and the outreach in a way that you are being conversational, Kevin, to your point, and just always thinking, is this a different experience than what they're used to, right? If they're getting, you know, everyone's getting pitch slapped in the inbox, right? Don't pitch, right? But then people are like, well, that's long-term. Well, what do I do? Well, there's so many different ways to be a recruitment partner, right, to kind of engage in the conversation. We all know companies are always struggling, right? So just use that as like your mindset and kind of figure out the questions from there.
And to kind of segue that into, I know we're talking sales. Y'all know I'm the content guy. That's the piece of letting your content work for you. That's where you don't have to feel so like you have to sell them now, because as you're sending those messages, the algorithm sees that. They see that you guys are communicating in the messages. Your content will start getting fed into their timeline. They're going to start seeing the stuff you're talking about. Now your messages are going to start to make a little more sense. And it's just this flywheel that works for you as content and sales work together.
So some of the sales plan could be when you have that top 20, that top 30, you know, you have your niche, your vertical, like then it's, you know, being able to connect with that ICP, the ideal client profile. What are their pain points? What's their day to day? What's their current experience with agencies? What do they believe about agencies that you want to shift that tone and be able to start writing about that, posting about that? But then that's also how you run some of your discovery calls and some of your meetings and some of your interactions. And Keely, I know you have a ton of thoughts there on how to kind of shape that. But how do you approach? And we'll probably skip some steps on the plan. You know, but we can kind of get into some of the stuff we have, the goals and the account focus talk, but just even on the calls, like how do you approach the call without just like, so it doesn't become transactional?
You talking like the discovery meeting calls? Like when you first,
I would say, your discovery calls. If someone, there's different examples. I think I also want to talk about what happens if someone reaches back out as a candidate and how to kind of turn that, how to handle that call. Well, let's just say talking to a hiring manager, intro call, maybe there's a role or two that they're struggling on, but there's not an agreement yet, right?
Yeah, I mean, first things first is you got to do your research, right? Like if you were to wing it, so to speak, like you think you know what you're talking about, that is the fastest way to fall on your face. And by research, I'm talking basic stuff. Again, back to the basics, and I know it is, but understanding what's going on from a company perspective, from a high level down to the low level, to what's happening potentially in the hiring manager's group, to knowing things such as simple as how long has the role been open for, right? Or if you're doing research on LinkedIn, I love seeing the number of applicants. Role's been open for 6 weeks, you have two applicants? That might be a problem, right? Like that's something I would be coming prepared to discuss and talk about. But then also expand upon the company research is who are their competitors, right? What are they experiencing? What's happening in the market that in that regard? Because I think a lot of people love to know what's happening on the other side of the fence, right? Like, what was the show we grew up in? Home Improvement. There's a guy. He's like this. Yeah. You always wonder his face. You want to know what's happening on the other side of the fence. Same thing applies for people that work for companies. They want to know what's happening outside of their space when it comes to things like hiring, right? They're hiring for specific positions, and you can come in and talk about what is happening at the competitors or similar companies or whatever. That alone is enlightening to them. You're providing value to them that they could take back, and they might not use your services, which obviously is unfortunate. We want to get there, but if they take that back to their HR team and say, well, hey, I just sat down with this Keely guy And he told me the standard rate for this position is 75K and we're only offering 65K. Do we think that's an issue? Is that why we're not getting candidates, right? And just like that, you've provided value and change how they're going about to fill this role. So if and when they do need to use and they're ready to use your services, who are they going to think of? They're going to think of the guy that sent resumes or they're going to think of the guy that helped them out the last time they were in a jam.
Yeah.
I mean, the answer is pretty obvious there.
It's a no-brainer.
That's why having the abundance mindset is so important. Like just that specifically, because there's how many conversations do we get into where we could probably offer like 5 minutes of support that would mean the world to them. Yeah. And then what does that mean down the road? Again, as your content and everything else is working for you, you're that person. So 100, that was a great point, Keely.
Yeah. It's and doing that at volume, right? Enough times when we talk about, if you can do that twice a week with people, you could do 100 meetings with people that are the hiring manager, decision maker, maybe some champion level. Like, what could that do for your efforts this year? I think so people just don't plan at all for that. You don't plan for those little wins, as we call them. But that's how those keep stacking up, which keeps stacking up, right? We always talk about those little small wins. There's so many ways to accomplish those with a 5-10 minute conversation and giving some of those different insights and knowing how you can add value as a recruiter on those calls. I think it's so important. As you talk about, Keely, client call preparation, but also just what do you bring to the table,
right?
Preparation as a recruiter, as a salesperson in this industry. I think really knowing that about yourself, right? I can hop on any call. Any one of us can hop on a call and teach someone about content, teach someone about LinkedIn, the power of building a brand there. And we have some experience, some skills behind that piece of it. For most people we talk to, that's going to be a game changer that they're not doing it, right? And so knowing that as an agency recruiter, like what are some of those things that you have in your bag of tricks that you can always know that is going to add value in every single call? And just get in the habit of doing that. I think it's so, so important.
Yeah. Hey, your proposition. Go ahead, Keely.
I was just saying, just back to the small wins, right? We start every Tuesday call with that. We start calling them smallish wins now, because you have to, one, do those small wins, as you said, Clark, to build with the relationship, to meet those 100 people who will come back around. But you also have to do it for yourself, right? From a sanity perspective. Let's not forget that, because you don't break accounts every day. Like that just, it doesn't happen. No one's going to break 365 accounts this year. I had to break everyone on this call. It's just not going to happen. Yeah. But what everyone can do is have a small win every day. And it can be something as simple as, I connected with the hiring manager. They told me no today, but I know they use agencies. Yeah. Great, right? That's a win in my book. That's a big win, actually, because now you know you're on the right track. You might have to change your messaging up. You might have to come at it from a different approach. Who knows? There's a lot of ways you can go from there. But that is a small win that needs to be celebrated for your own sanity as well.
And I just want to say real quick, and the reason why this is, y'all, think about it. Like, think about any big goal you've put. It's abstract. Any big goal is an abstract thought. It's really hard to picture. And we talk about this in our content course that we teach, leveraging concreteness. The same goes for your goals. The reason that you're breaking them into smaller goals is so that they're visualized. You can paint the picture that I can actually do this. It becomes something that's not this crazy 6-month thing that you have to do. It's this day thing that you have to do. And then once you tackle this, you have an accomplishment, right? The reason so many people love construction is because they can create something with their hands. And then when they're done, they get to see the final piece and how it works and how people use it. The same thing happens for you. That big goal that you have for $5 million, that's super abstract. You have to break that down into tangible, concrete pieces of how you'll get there. And then to Keely's point, you'll build the believability with yourself that you can do it, because that's just as important.
I want to add that construction piece. I really like that metaphor, because I was thinking too, study after study has shown the biggest motivating factor for humans is progress.
Heck yeah.
And so using the construction as a great metaphor, yes, there's the final piece, but what did you see along the way, right? You saw the foundation get laid. Then you saw, I'm thinking of a house, right? I'm not a construction person. So if I butcher this, you lay down the foundation, right? Then you're putting the supports in, you're putting the beams in, right? Step by step by step. You didn't just stand in front of a yard of an empty grass space and say, I hope there's a house there one day. No, you did it bit by bit, but you saw the progress. And you kept getting more and more motivated. The closer and closer you got to that goal, I bet the more and more excited you got. But you only got there because you did all the little things. And you saw the change slowly occur as you built this house, as you built the tower, whatever it is you want to use from a metaphor standpoint.
So just because you said that, so it feels like purpose and progress. Like purpose is the big goal, but the progress is those little bite-sized things. the purpose is that 5 million and you got it. You know what you want, like, right? That driving force, but you got to break it down.
Running, building a house, right? There's some common themes here and it's no different, right? In sales, agency recruiting, we can dive into this a little bit more. You know, Keeley came up with this, this slide, presented it in the Digital Recruiter Mastermind, like our sales calls. I think we did this. This is December, right? Going into the year. But I mean, look at all the little steps here, right? Identifying accounts, the 20, the cadence, the follow up, like there's a lot, but in this might seem like a lot to do, but also way we're just talking about what Keeley and Kevin just said, there's a lot of small wins in here to be accomplished as well. And so as you start to chip away at it, like give yourself credit, right? I mean, you can't sit back and not do nothing until the job's done. You made some placements, but like, just appreciate that, like every piece of this that you're doing is something that maybe your competitor isn't doing. Well, right. And like, you're separating yourself from the pack there.
And then how excited are you? Just like, seriously, like how excited are you guys when you accomplish like one of these things off this task to do the next one? Yeah. Like it makes it fun.
It does. And that's what I think prospecting should be fun, right? Because when you have this system and you know when you're going to do manual outreach, when you're going to do automation outreach, but the prospecting, you have the right people, but then you know content is going to keep you top of mind. And then you all these tools that, you know, you invest for, you get contact information, email and calls. Well, your emails and calls could be a lot more targeted now going forward. Like, this is what we mean by like the goals and the plan, right? What's the approach? Yeah. What's the system with the tools and the outreach, right? And then like you have that, it's a lot easier to be consistent because you know you have the approach and the system down. It's like, well, being consistent becomes fun now.
That's it.
Right, in a sense, because you know there's going to be difficult parts, but now you're also allowing the opportunity for good things to happen out of the blue.
Well, right? You know it's going to be difficult, but I think the anxiety comes from the lack of direction, right? Like you wake up every day and it's just this big goal, but you lack your like. But when you have an idea of what you're going to wake up and do, I know me, I'm like, let's go. And then when I accomplish it, it's just a whole nother level. And that's when it becomes fun. That's why you have anxiety right now, because you wake up every day and you're like, how do I get to this number? Keeley, we're showing you right here.
Yeah, I mean, I put this together like it is. I mean, it's not exact, but I put this together to also have some fun with it too, right? Like blow their socks off in the meeting, celebrate the shit out of it, right? Things like that. That's important, because back to the sanity piece, this, what you see on that sticky note, the right side of it, it is boring at times. Like, let's not kid ourselves. This is boring stuff at times. Like, finding 400 accounts is not fun. It takes a lot of time. It's really hard work. And then paring it down to 50 is not fun. It takes a lot of hard work, right? But you keep building on it to get to the payoff. And then you realize, wait, this is what it took to get there. I'm now excited to go back to the beginning because I know the path to get there and I can do it again. And then I can do it again. Then I can do it again. And before you know it, becomes more, I don't want to say robotic, but you just become more comfortable. And to Kevin's point, you wake up every day knowing, okay, here's my plan. I have no anxiety. I have no worry about what I should be doing. I know what it takes to be successful because I've done it. And I'm just going to keep doing it over and over again. And all the things that I thought were boring are actually a little bit more exciting, because I know this one boring step in the beginning will lead to this one really exciting thing at the end.
The good sales, like executing a good sales process, it does get boring after a while, right? Like it's just like you're on autopilot. You're having it should be. You want it to be boring in a sense, because that means like you have a plan and you know what works. And Keeley, what you said, like once you've done it once, you know it works. You go back to it, and that's okay. It doesn't mean you don't do it, but the fun part becomes because you have a system. It's like, all right, well, I know the approach. I know the system. Like the consistency is what becomes like the fun and the challenge, because how many different nuances. You could have 50 managers give 50 different replies to the same question.
Yeah.
Right. And now you're spending time. The challenge is on how do you then weed through all that? And that's a whole different set of problems. Right. And so that's what we're getting to, is like the approach and the system you can figure out in a few months. Right. That's typically after the 90 days. That's what everyone has in a digital recruiter. They have the approach. They have the system. They've tried it. They kind of see how it reacts. We're like, all right, we're going somewhere with this. And then the consistency is where it becomes fun, right? How do I come up with fresh content, right? How do I weed out this target account and add this one in? Or I just got this lead, right? It happened on the sales call Tuesday, right, Keeley? Someone called in inbound because of a referral over a successful client. They got 100, 200 roles. Okay, what do I do with that, right? Like, how do I chip through that? Now, that's when it's fun. The process might have become boring, but that part of it's fun, right? Kind of working through that, and that's a whole different challenge. So that's what we mean by that.
Now y'all are giving me like some investment vibes. Path over prediction, right? I had a really wealthy man teach me a long time ago that, and sorry if this is mean, y'all, but amateurs look at the right side of the equal sign and professionals look at the left. Yeah. And it's that you got to know how to get there and not think of the result. And it's like, seriously, once you put the plan, you get direction, you start executing on this list, and then you get to like cross one out or do whatever to gamify the situation. And to Keely's point, man, I can't tell y'all how fun it gets when you get to go back to the start of it with all this knowledge, all these failures, all this learning, because the second time around, what you do is you don't do it the same way. Now you have it, you can think of things abstractly. So now you can have fun and experiment with things the way you couldn't before. Because before you were just so nervous about what you were doing that you were just so focused on this. But now you're like, oh, whoa, I went through all this. So now you can have this real abstract bird's eye view while you're able to look into the detail, and that's where everything gets fun. And that's what we're talking about. But you don't know until you just have to do the boring
get
hard work.
The reps. The reps.
I would add to Kevin's point about going back. It's less brain power the second time you go through from a process standpoint, but allows you to have more brain power around, as you said, the creative piece, right, where you can come up with different messaging, you can look at it from a different angle. Because I've been really into like reading self-help type books this year around productivity, time management. And we all have a finite amount of like willpower and basically brain power too, to use throughout the day. So when you have a process in place, that allows your mind to be creative in other ways. Because if you're creating a process, you're using up your creative power to do that. So then it's harder to come up with messaging. It's harder to come up with replies. It's harder to come up with like a different viewpoint. But once you have the process in place, it allows your mind to focus on other things and perform at a different level that it wasn't able to do before. So I just want to add that as well. I think that's a big thing. And I was guilty of it too. I thought like, oh, I have to do the same thing over and over again. Like, I want to be creative. That's why I enjoy this job, is the fast paced nature. I get to think on my feet. Like, why would I want, stick myself in this bucket or this same process over and over? It's like, no, you got to look at it a different way. By doing that, it frees me up to be creative and think of things in a different way, because I'm not wasting my brain power on this side of things.
Well, Kevin loves to say brain calories.
Well, it's Donald Miller. So he
loves
Donald Miller. Yeah. Brain calories. It is. Yeah. Yeah. And the less that you have to make people use to understand who you are, what you do, it's the better, because we're using so much on all this other stuff that we have anxiety and depression and all these emotions about. So,
and so that's why we go from approach to system. Let's figure out these first four phases efficiently, effectively. It'll take us 2 to 3 months. So then we spend time on the consistency piece here. I'm going to try to write. Can I write on this thing? No. I thought I could. Oh, that's edit layout. Can I circle this thing? Maybe I can't. I thought I could draw on this thing or
just
something.
Just paint a picture with your words.
Yeah. But I wanted to have fun. I want to edit like I can on Zoom, right? I can like draw or whatever on there. Maybe I can't do that on here. But the consistency piece, right? Phase 5 and 6, that's where you want to spend the year. I mean, once people, go through the 90 days with us, it's like they'll stay working with us in different capacities at times, but it's like it's staying consistent. Like, that's where you want to use the brain calories on, is this piece of it. So if you don't have the approach down, you don't have the system down, get help, like get that in place as quickly as possible, right? In the right way, so you can focus on consistency, because this is where you want your medium, your bottom of your funnel, you're closer to the money. You have to be spending your time here. And that's why we talk about going back to the plan. Get all that work done. Yes, it's boring. Yes, it's kind of a grind. It's grueling, but get it done so you can spend more time here. Then you'll be able to hit those goals faster.
And that's the fun. You could probably replace consistency with fun, because this is the fun phase. The boring phase is understanding and figuring out the approach, understanding the foundation, right? Again, like going back to the construction. I can tell you, I've built 4 houses. Building the foundation and putting those 16x4s, oof, I hated it. But then little by little, you start to see the pieces come together. And then you get the system down, right? Now everybody's humming along. Everybody's playing their part, and the facade is coming together. And now you have people coming to look at this, right? Like, it just little by little. And then before you know it, now you're having people come to look at the home. You're talking with people, right? Now it's all the fun part of when you're included and you get to show off what you've done, what you've built, what you've created, all this effort that you put, all this energy. Now you're just showing it off. How are you going to show it off?
That's it. And that's when you get closer to the money. And that's what's more fun. That's when it becomes fun. Keely, should we actually, one more thing. We'll cover, so Luke said, looks like something both individual contributors and managers should review. Managers want the end goal, but many times forget the little steps that go into hitting that goal. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, we've all had managers like that, unfortunately. It's just they look at outcomes over processes when they should be looking at processes over outcomes.
Just make more calls, buddy.
Right.
Thanks. That's a new one.
Right. Yeah, like a great coach, manager, mentor, you want to do it, should be helping you along the way with your processes, being excited about all the, as we talked about before, the small wins, because we understand what it takes to get to the end goal. And sometimes the people who haven't done it, they don't know that. And it's hard for them to believe that. So you got to be there to help them along the way, along all those little steps. Because what's the saying, like, you can't see the forest through the trees? It's the same concept here. It can be hard to think, like, well, how am I ever going to break into this Fortune 500 company? How am I ever going to break 10 accounts? How am I ever going to land my first client? Like, even something as small as that, it's like, okay, stop thinking like that. Let's start focusing on what we can control, the processes we can do, and we'll work together through that. And trust me, if you follow these things and you're diligent, and obviously you're going to need some help along the way with messaging, little things here and there, you will get there. Because this is the path that it takes to get there. And we know that.
It's, I'm writing a note because I want to come back to that point, but I want to cover Heather's point first. Just like in sports, the first championship presents the greatest challenges. The roadmap is undefined. After achieving that success, it becomes a matter of resetting and repeating the process because now you know what it takes to win.
Okay, Heather, coming at us with, oh, I see you. Get
that. I like that. Man, there's no way I could take this. Dude. I don't want to go too down that road. But like then you get to this point where it's called imposter syndrome, right? And everyone gets it too, where you've been successful and then maybe you have a down quarter or two and you're like, man, was I successful or was I lucky, right? Then that's a whole mind, like a mind game. And I've been there. Like I went down some deep holes where I'm like, I don't know if I'm good at this anymore. Because I've had success in the past, I'm not seeing the same. Like, it can go a million ways. But I think that's a great point, Heather, regardless, right? Championship teams, I love this metaphor. If you're not posting, make sure you do that, Heather. Otherwise, I'll probably steal it. So just let you know.
Well, I have posted some similar. It was, okay. You know, the hardest thing to do is repeat in sports, right? It's or some would say it's the first, you know, get into the pinnacle. But, you know, those people that don't make it to Super Bowl and don't go back, you know, that's why.
I mean, even sequel movies. Most sequel movies suck.
It's tough.
It's like right. every team in the NFC East. What, there hasn't been a repeat champion in 20 years? What is that about? Like, you know, like that's insane.
Yeah.
All right. We don't have to talk about my Cowboys.
I mean, there's also complacency that plays a factor into it as well, stuff like that. But yes, there's been no repeat NFC East champion in like 19 years versus the AFCs when the Patriots are around. How many times did they win it? Like 18 out of 24 years or something like that? Like, it was insane.
Unfortunately, our run is over.
That's true.
That's tough, but it was a great run. And I loved every bit of it. But, you know, in Belichick leaving, it's an interesting thing. To Heather's point, that's what was so fun about following them, being a fan, is just learning. I learned so much from him on just how to not be complacent and just approach it business-like every day, not get too high, not get too low. I mean, you can – a lot of people don't like him or whatever, but you can't not respect the results and just how they were able to – be like that every step of the way. Now you need the right pieces to have some of the environment that he had, right? You need a Brady on the field that's willing to get chewed out in film study and all that. Like your leaders have to be your best performers, right? And they have to be the best at practice and doing these things for any organization, right? That's why I always say for people that come in the program, if an owner wants to put their people through, their producers through, they got to go in through themselves because you got to lead from the front. In the agency world and kind of show the team and you have to set the tone. And then that's what they did so well. And you could love them or hate them, right? Depending on where you live or who you, what team you're a fan of. But like, that's what they showed up every year. You pretty much knew they were going to be in the championship game. But it's like, what were they doing those 364 days of the year to make sure that they were there every single time, right? Watching film, the right drills, the right reps, learning from other coaches, learning from college coaches, like what's new, what's innovative, but also what are the fundamentals, right? And how do we kind of have to approach like every single day? And like, it's so similar in the "What have you done for me lately" world, which also is agency recruiting, right? There's a lot to be learned there, right? And I think the Chiefs are kind of doing some of that as well, right? It's, they got the talent, but then they have the process, right? They lose Tyreek Hill and they win the Super Bowl the next year, right? Like, they're really establishing that piece of it. It's well, not always the flash, it's the process.
Like the Patriot way. Like, there's not many teams that I hear like their way. It's almost like they had an onboarding, it felt like. Like, whenever anybody would talk about it, you know, about how it was, like, it felt like they were talking about, like, they got onboarded. And then when they came in, like, there was this culture that they had to adhere to. And if they didn't, then they didn't have success. And then they were gone. And it was the people that bought into that culture, which is to trust the process. And, I mean, like, look, I'm not a big fan because of where I'm a fan of. But if I'm going to keep it real, there's not many coaches that start with one plan in the first quarter and have completely changed it by the third because they recognize that they needed to. So in terms of just recognizing what's, you know, who you have, what's going on, having a bird's eye view, but also being able to detail it and change things up, which goes to kind of, you know, everything we're kind of talking about here.
Which is what you just said, though, right? You implement the plan in the first half, right? January, Q1 or whatever. And what tweaks do you have to make? What are your replies? How do you need to change maybe some of your approach messaging? Maybe your content needs to be tweaked, right? Those are the halftime adjustments,
yep.
Right? And how quickly you can make those and how effectively, right? That determines maybe how the rest of the course of the year, right? Do you have the support? Do you have the training? Do you have the coaches that are going to be there to kind of see what you're doing and kind of evaluate the reps and give you like – Tom Brady was in the QB room every Monday morning with his QB coach, with his offensive coordinator. Hey, what did I do? I mean, he's the best player that's ever lived, best quarterback of all time. Getting coached every single week. That's one of the things he always talks about. He loved being coached hard because he wanted to be the best. The best players have coaches, have the right coaches around them. Like, they'll have different coaches, right? They'll do different things. Like, it's never enough. And it's never like, oh, I did great, so I don't need any help. It's just like, all right, that's like, it might work for some, right? But it's then you're inevitably going to hit a downswing. And then what do you do then, right? What's your game plan, right? You got to have that humility to keep winning in a sense, right? That confidence, but that humility to like, all right, how do I add? How do I keep the competition away from you? How do I keep separating myself from the competition? And I put this in the notes. That's the reason the cold calls and all this stuff isn't as effective now as it is 20 years ago, 15 years ago. It's because there are 10 times the number of agencies. And there's internet, there's email, like there's so much more competition than when a lot of these owners are teaching you. Well, that's what worked for me. Great. There was five agencies, right? You were faxing stuff over. Like, it's way different nowadays. And so like, you got to do way more. You got to be way more strategic to get ahead of the game, to be a top player in this industry.
I'd say one thing, we've really hit on this whole Patriots thing right now too.
I love it.
I'm a Patriots fan. I'm Chicago. I'm a Bears fan, but like, I respect the Patriots. The one thing I would add to kind of maybe wrap this up, this metaphor, is the Patriots that won in 2002 were not the same Patriots in 2018. The game changed. Yeah. So another takeaway you could always look at is the Patriots. I love acronyms, ABL. The Patriots, they're always be learning. The Patriots are always learning, always adapting, and always changing to the NFL. Because 2002 was like a run game, right? Like, that was the I formation.
Play action, right? Screen pass, right. Charlie Weiss. Dude, I'll break it
right.
all down for you.
Right. Then 2008, 2009, yeah. Randy Moss, like, air it out. Like, yeah, they were ahead of the times, right? They saw that, but they were always adjusting. They're always learning. And to even expand on what Kevin said about the halftime adjustments, too. They had a plan, but they – if we're tying into recruiting, right, they took market feedback and they adjusted based on it. They thought they had an idea. They went into it. They executed on it. They got feedback. They adjusted. They went out and executed again. They kept doing that over and over again. And that's why they were so successful for so damn long, too. That's the big key piece. I think it's so amazing about the Patriots is how long they were successful for, because they're constantly adjusting, adapting to the times and learning and thinking, just because it worked yesterday doesn't mean it's going to work tomorrow. We need to always have an open mind about that.
In a league that was set up to specifically prevent what they did.
Right. Yeah.
That's the other thing.
Right? The NFC East, right? Again, back to the NFC East. They want the NFC East. They don't want the AFC East. Like, the NFL wants parity. There's a reason why the trade deadline is so early in the year. So every team, I mean, look at this year. What was it? The second to last week, there was like 20-some teams had a shot at the playoffs. That's what they want. they want that parity, and the Patriots are like, yeah, no, we're just going to win it all the time. It also helps to have the greatest quarterback of all time, too.
It helps, but it's a whole thing, and that's where, to bring it back to kind of the recruiting, what we do, Digital Recruiter, some of my the favorite people to work with, they've been at it for 30 years. They're like, hey, the old way isn't working as well as it used to, right? My emails, my reply, I got to figure out this digital stuff. And they just tell me story after story and all these wins, and they just know so much. I'm like, press record. Let's get the transcript. Let's write about this. Like, that's all. Like, the people just need to know what you know and what you've done. And here's some messaging tweaks, because here's what everyone else is sending. So here's how you can kind of pivot and leverage what you know. All right. And just get the conversation going, because you know what to do when you do that. Right. And when you kind of get them in that position, it's like, it's a whole new world for them.
The funny parallel about all the things we're talking about, and it's the parallel for so much of life, is it's technology. It's the same thing with the NFL. It's the same thing for us. The reason that all the changes have happened is because we have analytics now. And now we have these people that sit and will replay the same freaking play 1,000 times to analyze every little single detail, because that little detail will tell them a little bit, will give them a quarter of a percentage gain, like, right? Like, and then the same for us. The game has changed because everything has come online. I remember us having this conversation with, I forget who, where they mentioned that, you know, they used to do business in like a yellow books, and that's where they'd get $500,000 worth of business. And it always was that way. That's where they find their customers and this and that. And then and then after the pandemic, like, it just came online and everything changed.
Yeah.
And that's just so many people's story, is like, that's it. And guess what? Guess what, y'all? Technology is very exponential and it's not slowing down. So this is going to continue to be the case, if not more and more and more.
Well, I think a good point, Luke. I think we definitely hit on that. And then a fun one, Ben saying, was it all Brady or just the coaching? Well, here's the thing. Everyone's been giving Belichick crap, right? For Brady won in 2020 in sports, even count for me. That Super Bowl, there's no one in the stands. That's not
real. I don't want to count the
Dodgers. Doesn't count. But all that, the Lakers, that doesn't count. None of that counts. 2020. They were 8-9 last year, right? Baker Mayfield, what, 9-8 this year? He won a playoff game. Brady didn't win a playoff game last year. I don't know. Baker Mayfield, the same team, same coach, doing a better job this year, right? Is he better than Brady? Absolutely not, right? It's the dynamic. They needed each other, right? Brady, to do what he does, needed the rest of the structure in the organization to do what he does great. Right, that's like the top biller at an organization. Would they be a top biller if they already had to go start on their own agency and build the whole infrastructure? Well, time and time again, we see that doesn't always translate, right? Because there's so many different things that go into building the organization and setting up your top producers for success versus actually being a top producer. And that's why Belichick and Brady worked. They respected each person's role in the whole process. Brady respected what Belichick could do for him, and Belichick respected Brady for what he could do. He kept the salaries down for everyone, right? He got people to buy in that wanted to be there. They were able to get better deals, and Belichick made the most of that, maybe with not drafting wide receivers, unfortunately, but at least he figured out like the tight ends is a piece of it a little, right? And different things. So that's how it all works. And that's how it's got to work with your team, right? You got to put the process in. You got to respect what are people's strengths. We put them in a position to succeed. The amount of agencies that don't do that is freaking baffling to me, right? That they're going to be here in a year, in January. Why didn't we hit our goals last year? Well, you had people make 400 cold calls with no strategy. You had all these LinkedIn recruiter seats with no optimized profile, so no one had any idea. You bought Zoom info, but had no strategy of how to use it. You didn't track if anyone was using it, right? It's like the answers are there, right? Or you want to hire more people, so you take your good people away to train them versus actually just lifting up the people that you have. Right. And so and that was also the pet stuff.
Peeve. Yeah. Pet peeve. Sorry. Pet peeve. Oh, I hate that one. I hate that one so much. I can't tell y'all, and I'm just going to end it here, but because I haven't been able to say this probably live out loud, but when I used to work at Amazon, oh my God, sorry, Amazon. I apologize to everybody, but how much we just would not look at all this amazing freaking talent we'd have. There'd be like 50 people on a team and we knew there was 20 too many. Right. Right. But they just, and I'm like, but look. Look, they're right there. And then guess what? You don't have to go all this. And they know that. Anyway, I digress. Sorry.
It's brutal.
It's brutal.
It's brutal. It's a problem. We got one last thing here.
I digress.
the account focus doc. You want to just go through this quickly, Keely, because I know you want to talk about it.
Yeah. The highlight part on the right didn't come through quite right when it went PDF version, apparently. But account focus doc, if you're looking to use this, it's really your goal within the goal, right? So you have your accounts, you know who you're going after. Great. That's a good starting point. You have 50 accounts, but now let's get even more specific within each account. Whether it's identify 10 new people, get on 5 meetings. We are in a relationship-driven business, so it could be something personal. Checking in on someone's cruise went, how their wedding was, taking them out to lunch. The point is you want to create this document and hold yourself accountable each quarter to trying to check off these things, because you know when you sit down and do this, the goals you put on paper are the ones that you believe today will move the needle forward, move, you know, I guess we're talking football, move the ball forward to get you obviously into the end zone, the end goal. And that's what these goals are meant to do. Little steps, which ties all back together at the beginning, these little steps that build on each other to break it into accounts, land and expand in already existing accounts, reactivate old clients, or just build relationships. Sometimes you're just in defensive mode with some accounts. They're not really hiring right now. Your competitors are trying to get in. You're trying there to make sure that the people you have worked with in the past continue to work with you when the time does come around and they need to hire again.
Be connected on LinkedIn, keep posting relevant content, right? Stay top of mind, ready to capture that timing piece of it. That's what you do. But you put all these pieces together, it's just, you're going to be powerful. You're going to be dynamic.
So, good question, Ben, on the bottom. You can pull that up, Clark.
David, do you want me to fire? I mean, I'm using HubSpot because they have a free version. I'm always cost conscious for people. You can use HubSpot. I think it's a great way to go. And you can also add more seats and obviously pay for it. I've used Salesforce. I've used Bullhorn as well. Salesforce is more in the SaaS world that I used it. Bullhorn was in the recruiting world. So I think they all have their pros and cons. I'm personally using HubSpot. If that means anything, great.
But I use HubSpot too. I love it. It works great. It does everything you need and it's free.
Yep.
And it's free.
We use Salesforce at Aerotech, interestingly enough. So in recruiting, I used it, but it's way too, I mean, most people, like, it's a whole thing. My friend Daniel Miller, who built, he's agency owner for a long time, he's literally been in recruiting since he was 15. He's a whiz kid, now adult. But he built an ATS called Recruiter PM. So I just signed up for that because we're doing some cool stuff with like AI sourcing and some of the different partnerships they have. So I'm excited to kind of see how that works. A lot of times I just use Google. HubSpot's definitely something I've looked at as well. But for the recruiting piece of it, just start with something. What I'll say about ATS and CRM, they'll sell you every benefit and feature ever. Do your own work to figure out exactly what you need, what your team and your workflow is, and tell the rep, this is what I want, this is what I need, and make them show that piece to you. Don't let them distract you with something else. That's always my feedback with this stuff.
It's a good point. As someone who sold SaaS, like sometimes you throw the flashy, cool things and then they never even use them. There's like, oh, that's good. They buy it because of that, but then they don't use it. So it's like, why did you purchase it? It solved a potential need you could see yourself using in the future, but it's not solving your need today. So it's not really helping you. So focus on what you need today and then you can always grow and expand from there.
Mm-hmm. And then as always, do I get anything else? If you ever have questions about Digital Recruiter, kind of what we do, we have a sales content course, pipeline, sales call, content call. Kevin, Keely, myself, we're always on there. We're teaching, we're working live, group classes. We have unlimited email support and coaching. We have one-on-one coaching. We have a whole Digital Recruiter library. We got a ton of this stuff in there.
Hey, real quick, can you go back real quick?
Yes.
All right. Look, guys, okay, you're waking up every day and you have anxiety because you don't have a plan, you're lacking direction. We got you, okay? Sales and content. Between Keely, Clark, Ross, Christina, the whole team that put this together, and I'm not downplaying this and I'm saying this with all my heart and soul, it is the best content and sales course for recruiters online, period. There is no better one that will connect sales to content and learn and teach you how to do it on LinkedIn with success, because we get down to the foundation of psychology and we break it all down. As we said, we don't make it abstract. We're making it very concrete so you can visualize, implement, and make it actionable. I just want to say that.
So this piece is on the front of my featured page. If you want to kind of check it out, want more details, you can book a call. We got videos, testimonials, case studies, all that stuff. I know we know your situation is definitely unique to you. So all this stuff becomes customized to you. That's what's fun about it. We bring out your voice in the sales process, the content process, the building your plan, your sales plan executing. So we love doing this stuff. This is what we do day in and day out for recruiters, by recruiters. That's what the fun part is with all this. Gentlemen, thank you. Appreciate you. This was a fun hour.
Oh, so an hour. Okay.
So we are at an hour. I know. You look at the first 2 minutes, you're like, do we got enough to talk about? And then next thing I know, it's 2:30. So, yeah. Okay, we got plenty. So, Keely, appreciate you dropping the gems as always. Absolutely. We're going to obviously be doing a lot more of these. We appreciate everyone's interaction. Ben, Luke, Patrick, Heather, Janine. Yeah. Oh, what's up, Janine? Riley, what's up, man? John. And just everyone else. So, John. So, we appreciate you. Share this. We got a bunch of other stuff. We got podcast episodes I've done with each of these guys to talk more one-on-one. There's a bunch of stuff out there. So,
and we're highly accessible. If you have a question, feel free to DM us.
Hit us up. Well, we got to figure out the schedule to keep going on these, but stay tuned on that. And other than that, you guys have a good weekend. Everyone listening, have a great weekend.
Bye, y'all. Have a good weekend.
We'll see you next time.